hello and welcome in again to the Worship Life Podcast with Mike Harlan. This is Brian Brown, your co-host. We're in Nashville. We're in the B.B. McKinney Studios. We are at
historic,
the apex.
The historic studios.
Of the Lifeway Building. Yes, the historic and majestic B.B. McKinney Studios. I really need to learn new adjectives.
I've used
the same adjectives on every single podcast.
Have you noticed in our new headquarters, we have that room at the very top?
Yes.
Where the
kind
life...
Is it a lighthouse or something?
Yeah, it's kind of a light thing, and they can change colors.
Yes,
that.
I did know
and
that.
I didn't realize that they were changing those colors quite often, but I've been downtown at night a few times over the last few weeks.
Haven't seen Old Miss's colors up there yet.
They would probably have to accomplish something on the athletic field. Yeah, and it's probably based on what I've seen lately. It's going to be a while before we see their colors up there. But anyway.
You stole our coach from MTSU, but the listeners don't care about that, Mike.
They don't care about
MTSU basketball, even though they should. What they care about is worship, but that's why we're here today. We have a special guest today. It's someone that we know well, many of our listeners know well, but we brought him in to talk specifically about praise teams,
some of our podcasts are kind of go down theological trails,
very
deep, ones we just recorded with Keith Getty not long ago.
Yeah. Very spiritual,
going down theological trails. Our guest today could certainly go down those trails as well, but. Today, we want to get real practical for ministry leaders that lead worship ministries.
Yeah.
And we wanted to talk to someone about developing and maintaining a worship praise team and band where they really, really are performing well and really doing a great job of enhancing what's happening in a worship ministry. Some real practical music things to talk about to make your praise team and your band and the people involved in that be tuned up and ready to go when you lead worship.
Absolutely.
So
introduce our guest.
Our guest is, he's not really a guest. It's Craig Adams.
Yeah.
Who is the creative director of Lifeway Worship. So everything we make, everything we publish at some point goes through his head. And a lot of people talk to me all the time, Craig. Welcome, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah, I want to make sure your mic's working.
Thank you so much.
Everywhere I go, people are talking about what we're making, what we're recording, what our sound has become in every area of our work, whether it's LifewayWorship.com or it's the latest Let's Sing musical or whatever, anthems. And you've been on our team now 10 years. Contract at first, and then you came on full time, and then you've been leading this work for what, seven?
Six.
Six? Just seems like seven.
Yes.
6 or 7 years, you've been the director of all of what's happening and the way we sound, the producer, if you want to use the music term that you will hear in studios. You've been the producer, the executive producer of everything we've recorded, and I hear over and over and over how awesome our stuff sounds, and that's because of you.
Well, it's because we have a great team. And we hire the right musicians around town who love the Lord and put everything they have into every note. And so I appreciate your confidence, but I have to say very quickly, it's not because of one person. It's because we have a great team.
Yeah, but somebody's got to put that team together and know where to go to find those nuances and those skill sets. And that's what you've brought to us.
Oh, I appreciate that.
And you've raised the bar of what we do in the studio now. And that means everything aspires to reach those levels of excellence, and so we're very grateful for what
I'm
you
grateful
do
for the opportunity.
Really, yeah.
And speaking of leading teams, do you see what I did there?
Yeah,
how
that
I
was
segued?
Pretty amazing.
I'm a professional, Mike. Glad to help in any way I can. We're talking about worship teams, and Craig also is an expert in that. He leads our team as a producer for sure. But then in your church, Craig, and then at Lifeway, we have chapel at Lifeway. You guys would want to know that. I think our listeners would want to know that. Oftentimes, Craig's the one that puts the worship band together there. A lot of great players. But then you also do that in your local church, multiple campuses. Is that right?
Yes. I have served now part-time at Clements Baptist Church in Athens, Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
We have a well-diversified program, I think, there, Department of Worship, several children's choirs, a student choir, student worship bands, adult choir, orchestra, worship band, worship team, a great media team, It's just a great place to be. I've enjoyed being
Well,
there.
I think that's one of the cool things about Craig and about all of our team, honestly. Yeah. If you look at our entire team at Lifeway Worship, we're not just sitting in an ivory tower hoping to figure out something that we can sell to churches. Our team are people that are on worship teams, that are leading ministries,
yes.
that are, I mean, we've got people that are in the band or the orchestra, or they're on the vocal team, or they're leading in some way. That's who's sitting on our team.
Yeah.
And I think that's what informs what we do every day.
It's unique and it's helpful, I think, in so many ways to be able to keep and not only your vocation focused on serving the church, but your avocation, if you will, as well, just kind of yeah. steeped in worship ministry throughout every week, for sure.
So that leads me to, I'm going to kind of just interview you, Craig, with your blessing. That's the way we'll do this. I want you to talk about, because you've been at that church there in Athens, a great church, that, and you come in every Monday with reports of what God's doing and what God has done in that mm-hmm. ministry, a great pastor that you love.
Yep.
But you've been there, has it been 2 years?
Two and a half years.
Two and a half
yeah.
years. So talk about that process of walking into a church as a new leader, because we have people listening to this that may be new in their church, as a new leader, and assessing what they're doing and where it is, and then having an idea of where it's going, and then that process of shaping the future. So how do you start? Where do you start building a worship and praise team?
Well, I'll tell you, in this instance, there are several things about this church that made it really easy in so many ways for me to slide in there. Number one, out in the middle of Canola and cotton fields, just outside of Athens, is this oasis of a church of about 800 people. And the pastor, the senior pastor, is a guy who is not only a lead worshiper in the church on the front row every week, but also loves music and surrounds himself with all different kinds of music, but at the forefront of his playlist every week would be the latest, greatest worship song. So I can have conversations with him as a pastor on a level that I have not been able to with other pastors for whom I've worked, just because he is in it as a worshiper and a kind of a fan of Christian music, I guess you could say. But he also values worship greatly in the worship service and understands that he is the lead worshiper of the congregation. We never really had to talk about that. I just saw him model that.
Yeah.
So that made it easy, because if the pastor values worship, then the rest of the congregation usually will as well.
Yeah.
They'll follow suit.
Yeah.
In addition to that, I stepped into a situation where they'd been without a worship leader for a year. However, they had a phenomenal team of lay leaders in place. The gentleman who preceded me did a great job of putting together a team. And when I walked in, I didn't have to do any recruiting. The children's choir directors were there. The student choir director was there. The student band leader was there. On down the line, orchestra director was there. Media team director was there. And so it was pretty easy to step into a situation like that where I didn't have to do any recruiting. And I recognized that that's not going to be the case for everybody, you know, just about anywhere. So that made it easy. It's not Nashville, which is what I love about it,
yeah.
truthfully. And what I mean by that is this. I don't mean it disparagingly at all. But in Nashville, the bench is pretty deep
yeah.
with great musicianship, regardless of the size of church. That's yeah. been my experience.
Sure,
and
yeah.
You have great singers, great players, and many of them vocationally are involved in music, you know, and just volunteer and serve at their churches on the weekends. In Athens, Alabama, I don't believe there's anybody who's involved in music professionally, save maybe a band director or two, you know, from a local high school or elementary school. So it's a different deal altogether. But what there is an incredible focus on discipleship for this church. The first three Sundays, just as an example, that I was there, I was just there on an interim basis to begin with. And three Sundays in a row, they were baptizing teenagers, 6, 7, 8 at a time. And it's been that way
wow.
every week since I've
awesome.
Been there for 2.5 years. So there is an appreciation and a value in this church for the Word that's a really healthy thing. They want to do life together and want to do life and the Word together and grow together. And so really strong sense of community. And again, it starts with the pastor. He has a real strong focus there. So when I came together with the leadership team of people there at the church for the first time, it didn't take me long to align them around scriptural principles and the theology of worship, if you will. They were already very well versed in that, and also had a real strong sensibility about what the Word says about worship. And so there wasn't a whole lot of training to do there, honestly. Again, I just walked into Utopia, truthfully.
All right, so let me interrupt you and just ask a question, because I can hear the guy that's work on his 30-minute jog right now listening to this podcast saying, but that's not my church.
Right.
So I want to unpack one thing you just said, and that is that maybe that's where you begin. Maybe the beginning place of building a solid worship ministry from a praise band and team isn't musical at all.
Absolutely, wholeheartedly agree with
that. It's a biblical beginning.
That's where I dove in, because it's been my experience, the several churches I've worked for down through across the past 30 years. You can have all the talent in the world that Nashville or any other entertainment city has to offer, but if folks don't have a good relationship, a right relationship with the Lord, if they don't really understand why they're coming together to worship, it's all just noise.
Yeah.
It might be well organized, but it's just noise, and there's no heart, and there's no value in that.
If you're in a change environment, and I say this a lot, so please forgive me for being redundant, Did y'all see what I did there?
Anyway, I did.
That you've got to lead change spiritually. You cannot just lead change musically. Mm-hmm. You want to start a worship war in your church? Try to make changes musically that don't have a spiritual context.
Right.
You're going to start a war of preferences that are stylistically diverse. And the reason that's the case is because music is so stylistically diverse, and the people we serve are increasingly stylistically diverse in their preferences and what they, and if you don't have a spiritual backdrop around the things you're choosing musically, you are setting yourself up for a dilemma. And that begins with a biblical view and a biblical backdrop of every choice you're making in worship, from the songs you sing to how many people sing them and how much accompaniment you use and the varying things that can happen as a result of all that. So I'm hearing that even as you're describing your experience in your church, you're saying it started with a biblical framework that your pastor took the lead on. But I would say to any leader that's listening is that you can step into that space. You can never replace your pastor's role. You shouldn't try to, but you can be another voice that's giving a biblical backdrop to why we do what we do week after week.
Yeah, well, let me tell you, Mike, another reason why I agree with what you're saying. My first assignment as a part-time person was at age 17, and I just started attending college and was leading worship on Sunday mornings and working with a worship band and a choir at a local church on Wednesday nights. And so throughout the week, I was studying a balance of music and theology, but probably was heavier skewed on the music side of things just because of my interests and whatnot as well. And I remember being about probably 6 months into that assignment at 17 years old, and a gentleman waiting around after everybody had left church to talk to me, and I said, "What can I do for you?" And he said, "Well, I'm not sure how to get into this, but I'm just going to come right out and say it. I'm wrestling with my orientation, and I'm not sure what to do about it."
Wow.
And you're somebody I've come to trust and somebody I feel like I can lean on. And I remember thinking to myself, well, the circle of fifths isn't going to do me a whole lot of good right now. and in that instance, I'm so thankful to say that the church I was working for had a real strong counseling ministry there, and we were able to get some help for him. But I remember thinking to myself at 17, man, as the son of a songwriter, producer, publisher, minister of music, so much of my life had been surrounded by music, and I love it, and I give myself to it, but it is not what is going to sustain you in ministry.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's not what is going to be life-changing for people overall. Music unto itself is just that. It's just music. And so
let's take a hard right turn.
Yep.
You know what it's like to build a team of people that are playing together well, singing together well. Let's start going down that real practical path. Let's say you're walking into a situation, you've got a bass player, drum player, somebody on piano or keys, you've got an acoustic guitar, a lead guitar, and they're sitting there and you're walking in to lead that rehearsal. How do you start?
Well, to me, it's not really that much of a hard right turn, because I think it does start with everything foundational from a scriptural and biblical standpoint. I think the next thing that a lot of people overlook is just overall chemistry for people. Been to a lot of churches, worked in a lot of churches down through the years, and the number one thing I've discovered with worship teams is that they spend most of their time in most settings together on the platform, either rehearsing or leading in worship. They show up to work together, to serve together, and they don't even know each other.
That's good.
And so practically, I would say another great place to start as you're building a team that's centered on the theology of worship and centered on the Word and centered on discipleship, man, get them together outside of Sunday morning rehearsal and Wednesday night rehearsal, and let them live together a little bit. And suddenly some of those diva moments that can tend to creep in, they take care of themselves, because people understand one another's personalities a little bit better. If they've been bowling together, if they've played Uno together, if they've shared really bad pizza together, just they understand one another relationally a little better. And a lot of the nonverbal communication problems that you can run into between worship teams on a platform and a sound man in the back of the church, they never spend time with one another. How are they going to understand background and personality and communication styles?
That's good.
So get them together. That'd be another thing I would say. Let them become a family. And family can get messy, of course, but there's a lot that's beautiful about family, too, when people can come together intentionally centered on the Word and centered on relationships. So I would say that would be the second practical step. Beyond that, I would say walk into rehearsals with a really good plan. If people are going to give of their time and service these days, time is precious and it's fleeting. People are pulled in a million directions. So if you don't have a good plan for them coming into a Wednesday night rehearsal or even a Sunday morning rehearsal, they're going to think you're wasting their time, even if you're not. So let them know you're out in front of them. You've got a good plan, and then exercise that plan and stick to it. Be punctual. Start on time for people. That's another great thing. Don't leave a whole lot of time for people to be coming in and checking their watches and checking their clocks. Get right around to whatever next Sunday or your plan is calling for, and spend ample time rehearsing in preparation. My suggestion is, because you want to stay centered on the Word and centered on relationship, start every rehearsal in prayer. Start every rehearsal in the Word, so that it brings everybody together for the right reason and the right purpose. People have come out of busy jobs or arguments in the car or a lot of variety of circumstances. You got to reset what their present reality is for them right away.
That's
recalibrate
good.
Life and get them into the Word and get them into relationship with one another, and let the music be born out of that. Then get right into the music and make sure you spend the time so that you have no child left behind. People have varying opinions about that philosophy for education, but I like it for church worship, because you might have somebody who's a skilled singer who's been singing for 45 years professionally, and you might have a sixth grade third clarinet player on the platform together, and both are of value to the family of God, and both are of value in terms of leading and worship. And how you navigate those relationships and skill sets is really crucial. And the only way you can get there is to put those people in a situation where everybody wins, and where that 60-year-old clarinet player can mentor that sixth grade.
No question. You know, our early experiences are so critical for church musicians. I would tell any church leader out there, and what you've said is just really, really helpful. If you're dealing with somebody's early experiences, maybe they're 14 or 16, and this is their first time to do a solo or first time to play in a rhythm section or whatever it is, realize that you're handling something that is very delicate and very fragile and life impacting.
Right.
I know somebody right now. I've got a specific person in my brain right now as I tell you about a person who was told when they were a young person that they didn't have anything to contribute as a singer. I happen to know this person is a fine singer, but to this day underutilizes a profound gift that God gave them because a church leader shaped that in their mind when they were just 14 or 15 years old and convince them that they weren't very good. I'm telling you, you are handling something precious when you're handling the first experiences of people that are wanting to serve, and you need to really treat them accordingly. All right, so this is gold, what you're talking about. And I always say, and thank you for what you said about punctuality, the most valuable thing people give you is their time.
Yes.
You've got to guard that and be diligent about it. And a real practical tip I'd throw out right now is if you're dealing in a rehearsal setting that has technical requirements for the rehearsal, along with musicians, rhythm players, or orchestra members that are involved, along with singers, how you stage that in a rehearsal is so important. Do everything you can do to not waste anybody's time. For instance, you'll want your tech guys to be prepared to go before the first musician shows up. You want your players to be tuned up, plugged in, ready to go. Their ears are on, their personal mix is set before the first singer walks onto the stage. The last thing you want to have happen is 15 singers sitting in the pews for 20 minutes while the sound guy is running the mic line running the back line for the amp.
And these days, they're going to pull out their phone and get engaged in something else, and you've lost them.
Yeah. I would tell the tech guys to be there first. I'd tell the guys that are going to be accompanying to be there later and ready to go. The moment they walk in, their lines are all ready for them to plug into. And I tell the singers to be there last and they don't even arrive at the building until they're ready to walk right on the stage and sing. So I would stage my rehearsal start times that way so that you don't ever waste a single person's time. And like you said, their focus leaves the moment. And you may never get it back if you start wasting their time.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Another thing that I've found is really helpful these days, regardless of the size of the team that you're leading, the number of people involved, you know, because people are busy and because family schedules are busy, and from week to week, one of the challenges is you really never know who you're going to have there at the end of the day.
Sure.
They may say in planning center, I'm planning to be there, but they may not be there, even if they've checked the green box. You know what I'm saying? So over communication is always something I've kind of been committed to in church ministry. It's never been easier than it is now because of all the tools that are at our disposal with texting and email and phone calls and snail mail. There was a day when you had a rotary dial phone and the mailbox.
Yeah.
And it was harder to speak to people consistently in those days than it is now. But I've tried to make it an exercise every Wednesday night right after rehearsal. For the folks who weren't there, I send out a note that says the title of it every week is, "What Did I Miss Tonight?" along with the date. And then it's a mixture of not only songs that we rehearsed and maybe sections that we highlight that were challenging that we kind of woodshed a little bit, but also funny quotes that happened in the middle of the rehearsal when that cut-up soprano lady, you know, who's always got a wisecrack that splits everybody's gut. I include that in there so that people know they didn't just miss rehearsal. They missed family. They missed fun.
That's
great. You got to plan to make it fun in some ways, but some of that happens spontaneously. And so letting people know what they missed if they weren't there, the fact that they didn't prioritize it for whatever. If there's that person who skipped out, sometimes it's vacation, sometimes it's work. Those things are understandable. But for the person who's been inconsistent and maybe skipping out, man, they got to know that what they missed was valuable.
Yeah.
And then always include in that wrap-up of what was missed, my commitment is I always include what we touched on spiritually so that if you weren't there in that moment, there's still a possibility the Lord can deal with you.
All right, so I want you to put your music ears on for a second,
okay.
Your producer ears, and now that band begins to play.
Yes.
How do you build a solid band underneath a worship service? That is, what are the two or three or four or five simple things that makes the band better as a leader that you know from your experience as a musician yourself, as a producer? Layer up a quality band that is supporting the worship ministry of your church.
I would say number one importance is you got to know how to speak the language of each of those band members. You may have been selected as the worship leader or, quote, song leader of your church just because you sang a special one Sunday and the pastor came up to you and grabbed you by the arm after church and said, I've been praying for somebody to come lead our songs for the past 15 years.
By the way, just put a hand up in the air. I think you're describing his experience.
Totally my experience, yeah. And when you talk about even building a worship band, Mike, I was that guy, Craig, that you're talking about, a song leader. And back when I was first asked to do that, there was a piano player. That was the only musician. We had an organist, too, actually, I should say that. Sorry for leaving my organist out. It's been a long time ago. But my piano and organ were the instruments I had. They were the instrumentalists. I was not a musician, just a singer. And so I could actually pull that off. They didn't expect me really to lead them musically. They were very well trained. And back in those days, the music led them musically, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. They were readers, and they read, and then it was up to me to figure out when to come in and bring the congregation in. I could handle that. I was comfortable on the platform. But as worship ministry started to transition to a band and you were just about to build that from the ground up and you talk about speaking the language, I was just not at all equipped to do that. And I know there's training and there's tools out there that could help me become equipped. There's certainly phrases and things that I could become familiar with. But where I've settled in, and I'd be curious your thoughts on this, and I want to get back. I don't want to interrupt. I didn't mean by raising my hand. I didn't know Mike was going to call that out on the air.
No, I
don't want to miss you building the band. But I do want to say that in my experience, and I've learned this only through tripping and falling and failing so many times, I've learned that to do what I can do well and what God's gifted me to do, leading on the platform, and I feel comfortable there. But I have learned to have a band leader. If you're not equipped, if you can't speak the language of bass player or a guitar player, don't be so insecure and don't be so afraid to admit your shortcomings. Appoint somebody who can speak the language, who is a musician.
That's good work.
And oftentimes those folks don't have the platform skills. They freeze up in the platform setting, but in a band setting they can talk the talk, they can speak the language. Mm-hmm. And so if you're not that guy, you can still be an effective worship leader by delegating that talking to the band part to someone who knows how to speak the language.
I absolutely agree, and I'll go a step further, Brian. I think even if you are well versed in the secret language of bands,
the Nashville number system.
I still think you're dead on. Having a band leader is invaluable for all kinds of reasons. One of those being you can only be so many places at one time as a leader.
Yeah.
And if on any given rehearsal night you have five different groups of people rehearsing at the same time, you're going to need to invest time with each of those.
Right.
As the worship pastor, if you will, or minister of music, you're going to need to be involved with all those people. So delegating a leader in every area, I think, is really, really wise.
And, you know, Brian, I wasn't calling you out, but I was just acknowledging that what we're talking about here is something that we've experienced ourselves. We're not just in this isolated word. And Brian, I've heard you talk about that many times, how your singing ability put you with a responsibility that you may or not have been equipped to handle on the instrumental side. And I can really resonate with that. I was a vocal major. And as everybody knows, vocalists don't even read music, right?
You're going to get letters and emails on that.
Well, I mean, that's kind of the urban myth that comes out of music departments. You have the instrumentalists who are the real musicians and the singers that just sing. But you know what? There is an element of truth to that. It's a different discipline, the singing discipline. Sure. I'll never forget the first time I stepped out in front of an orchestra. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't a single instrument sitting there I could play or even knew. You know, I knew a lot about them, but I didn't know. And I had to acknowledge early in my ministry with churches where we began to build an instrumental program, you know more about that instrument than I do.
Sure.
And I began to go after the larger thing, but acknowledging that I wasn't an expert in how to play those things.
Right.
But I did have to learn, and your advice is well taken. I did have to learn some things. I had to study some things and become more aware of how to speak those languages. But Brian, you're exactly right too. I had band members and band directors sitting in my orchestra that I relied on on to help me with aspects of it that I didn't personally have experience for. So we're almost out of time. We usually try to keep these podcasts within a little bit, and I've got more I want to ask you about this. I wonder if we might be better served. I'm looking for a nod from Tim. Why don't we record a part two of this, because you've given us some great things already to think about and how to build a worship ministry, and we were talking about band particularly. I'd like to continue to unpack how do you build a sound that accompanies worship well, and talk to that guy who is like what Brian and I were talking about, our experience was he's got a responsibility to do this, right, but really doesn't know how to do it. Right. I'd like to do that and keep recording here and make that the next podcast, Brother Brian.
Fantastic. So, Craig, you'll be back with us for the next episode of the Worship Life Podcast with Mike Harland. We'd love to hear from you. Email us, worship@lifeway.com. Tell us about your experience, maybe how you've overcome some of the challenges you've had in ministry. We'll continue to unpack that in the next podcast with Craig Adams. Also, let us know how we can pray for you specifically. Let us know other topics you'd like to have us discuss and experts you'd like to have us bring in. And just any way... We one of the things, Mike, I don't mention this often in the Worship Life Podcast, but we get many great product ideas and suggestions and ideas about how we can serve churches better. We love hearing from you. So worship@lifeway.com, interact on the worshiplife.com podcast.
I mean, almost every new feature lifewayworship.com has is because someone in that uses it said, hey, why don't y'all do so-and-so?
A minister of music, let us know. So please reach out, even if it's a suggestion you've had before. Many times those things get lost or buried, or technology might not have existed before, and it does now, and there may be things we can do that we weren't able to do in the past. So keep those ideas coming, those suggestions coming. Go to the worshiplife.com blog site and join the discussion on worship. For Mike Harland, this is Brian Brown saying thanks for joining us here for Discussions on Worship, the Worship Life Podcast with Mike Harland. We'll be back together talking about worship again really soon.